This week on Barbell Shrugged, we talk about weightlifting. We answer some of your questions about squatting, knee health, and assistance work.
Hey guys, this is Rich Froning, and you're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to fitter.tv.
I feel like all those Tony Schwartz books you probably really like. Like all his...
Shut the...
We always start right in the middle of the conversation.
Yeah.
I'm sure... 12? Come on, man.
I'm sure Tony Schwartz is a good guy. I mean... You know, preaching to choir a bit, it sounds like, but I'm sure those books are pretty good.
Yeah.
Anything but the Ted Allen shit. Get things done in your life. How to get it done.
Just count it down.
Three. Yeah, David Allen.
David Allen.
I've tried to get.
All right, welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bletza. I'm here with Doug Larson and Chris Moore.
Hi.
And we had to stop our conversation on how to be more productive.
I wouldn't stop
to start
talking.
This show.
I was so productive today. We spent 3 hours watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
How great was that, Doug? Did you feel productive after that?
I never feel productive when I watch a movie. My whole day is shot. If I can even make it through a movie, that's impressive. It kept my attention the whole time.
Well, but you were in a theater, so you really didn't have a choice.
It's the only way I can
today
do it.
I woke up, I ate food, I got busy for like an hour just getting in a position to watch the movie. Then I watched the movie and it was dark. That's a great Sunday right there.
Oh, man.
I'll tell you what.
We're waiting for this guy to get home from St. Louis. You're up the lab gym training with Thacker.
I took a traincation.
That's nomenclature for this.
Yeah, Matt Barrett introduced the term traincation, and then I was like, "Well, I'm going to go do that."
But that's nothing new. I did one of those in grad school several times.
Yeah,
I've got limited vacation time. I should spend it training.
Did you call it traincation?
Yeah, and I stayed in shitty hotels.
Call it traincation?
Yeah, I used to do that. Frequently, I'd stay in hotel rooms that cost like $20 a night.
Oh my god!
In the very worst part of town, because that's what you can afford. Last traincation ended with me packing early. I was like, I'll pack early that way tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just get on the road, and won't have to really fuss. Let's get up and leave. And I woke up next morning to a suitcase in the parking lot with all my shit thrown everywhere. Some crackheads went through all my clothes.
Oh my god! I remember talking to one of the minor league ball players with the Colorado Rockies, like asking if they stay in nice places. They were like, "No, we don't stay in nice places at all." He's like, "The last place we went to, my pillowcase had cigarette burns and blood stains on it." I was like, "Oh my god!"
That's the name of my first memoir: cigarette stains and blood stains and cigarette burns. It's gonna be a good one.
You get noticed.
My traincation was not nearly as difficult as yours, I don't think. I went up to St. Louis for the week. I went up on Monday, and I came back today, which is Sunday. So I spent a good 5 days of hanging out up there. I stayed with a friend, Corey. So I got to stay at a house in a guest bedroom.
Not a Days Inn for $20 a day.
That's right. So, okay. You know, I took my juicer up there, and I had all the amenities I needed for success.
You were successful, apparently.
Yeah. Yes, I was. I spent
much success.
During the day, I would go to like Starbucks and just do some of the work I normally do here at home. Mm. And then in the evening, we would go train with Team Lab. And so their weightlifting team, they all get together around 6 o'clock at night, and they train between 6 and 9 p.m. And he programs for the entire team. Everyone's on the same program to a degree, but he has like advanced, intermediate, and beginner levels. So he takes the same program and kind of tweaks it for each one of those levels, and then he watches. That's Justin Thacker, the coach. He and a couple other coaches watch and help, you know, make changes. And, you know, they may have like 3 sets of 2, you know, hang power snatches or something like that. And they may walk over and say, "Hey, why don't you work up to a single? You're looking good today." Mm-hmm. So they're getting good feedback that way.
How does this approach differ? You know, a few summary points for beginners versus the more experienced. Because in my experience, really all the specifics about training don't really matter. So if you can recognize what needs to be different between young folks and more experienced folks, then you understand the bulk of what you need to know.
Yeah, the volume is probably going to be a little bit higher for the less experienced, more practice reps. The intensity may not be as high, but the volume would be higher.
Mm-hmm.
Is he a no power lift guy for your beginning athletes? Like full lifts, lots of reps, lots of practice?
Actually, for the less experienced
folks. By no power,
folks,
ladies and gentlemen, I mean the lifts that are like, you know, power clean, not like power lifting.
The way he likes to do it, the way Justin Thacker does it up there is the less experienced you are, the more position work you're going to do. So you're more likely to pull from the blocks or something.
The less experienced you are.
Yeah. So you might do, you'll do like pauses at the knees, pause mid-thigh, pause high thigh. So you're going to be doing a lot more pauses and positionings and stuff like that, and pulling, you know, maybe doing cleans off the blocks and stuff like that.
Don't agree on that approach. A lot of good coaches don't agree on that approach. I know, like, I've seen, like, I think Glenn Pendley is very anti power lifts and anti variation for younger guys. It's interesting.
What do you mean?
Different outcomes.
Yeah.
Just to give them less to think about, or what?
Well, just practicing, like I said, I guess probably young lifters have lots of trouble, like, you know, diving under the bar and catching full lifts. And so it's probably better to get all that practice in at the beginning.
Most of the coaching is going on Monday, Wednesday, and Saturdays. And full lifts are programmed. There's not power lifts mainly programmed during those days. Mm. Tuesday, Thursday is when there's a lot of the power variation is programmed. The thing is just squatting that many days per week can be hard on the knees, especially when you're catching cleans and bottom. You know, it's a little bit tougher on the knees than just squatting. So they do a lot of the and not everyone at Team Lab does the Tuesday, Thursday training, but most people are coming in on Monday, Wednesday, Saturday. So some of them are only training 3 days a week and then kind of doing the assistance work. But like the Tuesday, Thursday is a lot of power variation and assistance work.
Yeah.
So that's when you're going to do, you know, bench press and barbell rows and stuff like that. It was real nice to go up there.
Or as Matt would say, you get kind of Chinesey on those days.
Exactly. Yeah.
You get a little Chinesey mixed with Bulgariishness.
Mm-hmm.
Chinesey. Easy peasy Chinesey.
Yeah. Justin likes a little bit higher volume training. It was nice going up there because I actually finished my weightlifting cycle like on Saturday. And then I was able to, like, you know, just do whatever they were doing and not have to worry about what it was I was doing. Mm-hmm. So I kind of jumped in and just did whatever they were doing. I figured I would get the best coaching that way. I went up there for the purpose of being coached, since I don't really get coached here in Memphis too much. I don't have somebody.
Doug's not a, he's never around.
Yeah, he just doesn't pay attention to me.
Not like he used to be.
It's good to go outside
of. He used to shower you with attention.
It's good to get outside of, like, I mean, Doug's watched me lift for 5 years. There's not a lot of new advice he's going to give me. Mm-hmm. I might
go. Details in training are probably way less important than having a fresh pair of eyes just watch you lift and tell you what you're doing.
Yeah,
it does less than right.
Yeah, if you've had the same coach for a year, it might be good to go spend a week with another coach.
Yeah, if you really want to improve, that's probably way more important than having somebody write on a forum, hey, I've tried this. You should maybe try doing RDLs in your training. Odds are, if you add RDLs, you're probably not going to have any improvement in your lifts. It's much more important to have somebody actually look at you and get next to other lifters who are just much better.
Absolutely. I think the biggest benefit to going to a different gym is being around other better lifters and then just emulating. For me, I'm a very visual learner. And if I can just be around someone,
just feel the energy of somebody else who's really fast. I mean, lifting on the same platform with somebody who's really good and fast, you will just do that.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly why, but you just don't look like an asshole compared to them. So you're going to be better. So if you're a CrossFitter who wants to get better at weightlifting, it's probably really good that you're a student of it. That's always really cool to understand. And it's probably really cool that you learn how to do things and you pick up on some new lifts, like pulling from blocks. It's probably pretty fun. It may help you and work on your mobility, all that. But really, if you really want to actually get better and quit fucking around, you will take some money and you'll go to a place where they train really well and are accomplished and knowledgeable and spend a couple hours, days, weeks, whatever you can afford just being around that. And you will be much better. That's really the only way to do it.
Anytime I've ever gotten any really good advice from somebody, it's always almost like right when I've met that person.
Mm-hmm.
Like the two pieces of advice that I ever got that really made a big change to my lifts. One of them was a person that I met for like 5 minutes. Like he like saw me do like two lifts and he was like, oh, you need to do this. And like widen your grip. And I was like, oh, okay. And my grip has been right there like ever since. No one ever told me to like put my hands where he told me to put my hands. And he just like happened to see me like at a conference and he was just like, yeah, you probably want to do that. And he was a good lifter. So I listened to what he said and it worked perfectly. And then when I moved to Memphis, Brian gave me a couple little tweaks like in the first 2 weeks. I made those tweaks and I kept them ever since. And I haven't really made many changes off of that.
Like, hey, why don't you lean your shins forward a little more? Oh, thanks. Well, I just lifted 10 more pounds. Thanks.
Yeah, it's funny how it's so small too.
Not the first time you've heard that, is it?
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's one of those things that you learn when you first start weightlifting. But I forgot. It's one of those things where I've been lifting kind of by myself or not with a coach for so long that some things just kind of went out the window and I didn't realize I wasn't doing those things. And that is finding a focal point. So like, I think most people who weightlift know that you're supposed to find a spot to look at and that's kind of like your focal point. That's what you look at. Mm-hmm. So your head's not moving all over the place, because wherever your head goes, that's where other things go. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even think about me not look having a focal point. It was just one of those things that got lost at some point. And one of the coaches, like as soon as I got there, like that Monday night, like mm-hmm. I drove in, and an hour later I'm weightlifting. He's like, "What are you looking at?" Mm-hmm. It's like, you're looking down when you start, you look up at this point, and then you're looking around.
you have no consistent reference that by which to judge your position.
Right. Yeah. So I was like, am I really doing that? Like, I didn't even realize, you know, it wasn't one of those things. Someone else had to point it out to me. Mm. I was like,
so
okay.
Where do you look?
So I've always been told, and what I've told people is to look not down, but, you know, find like, you know, look at in the corner, or where the wall meets the floor is usually where you would look. Right. So, and that's what I tell people. It's funny as I tell people that, and I don't even think about me doing it myself.
Well, that's the point.
That's
yeah.
crazy. Every coach probably needs a coach. But what he did was, I actually worked with a guy named Jimmy quite a bit up there. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Dukes.
That's a good
Jimmy
name.
Duke.
Jimmy's Dukes. A good lifter.
Yeah, he's a good lifter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he My name's Jimmy American Dukes. Weightlifting coach.
Is it Duke or Dukes? I can't remember.
I don't know.
Anyways.
Put up your Dukes.com.
There's a pull-up bar. And he put a piece of tape, white tape, on the pull-up bar, and I was actually looking a lot higher than I ever had before. Like, you know, I was like looking up, mm-hmm. and it actually was really beneficial for me. Like, it didn't cause me to hit a PR or anything like that, but I definitely felt a lot better about the receiving of the bar. Mm-hmm. So, pulling of the bar, I didn't feel like much changed, but two things did change when I did change my focal point, or just change the fact that I was having a focal point. Mm-hmm. One was I wasn't jumping backwards as much. Mm. So I was jumping back a little too far, I think. Mm. And then the other thing was, receiving the bar actually, became a little bit smoother. So I think it was because I think what I was doing is I would start looking down and then I would lift, and then I would like throw my head back.
Head whip.
Yeah. I would do the head whip. That wasn't probably something the Bulgarians did or something, you know, and jumping
I should do
10
that
feet
too.
Back. Yeah. So
I want to lift like them. Yeah. I'll do the head whip.
Exactly.
That's what you were thinking.
So I was doing that, and I think that helped straighten it out a little bit. But mm-hmm. That was one of the things I worked on a lot this week, was just looking somewhere.
The same thing goes for power lifts too, man. Like for deadlifts and squats, if you're looking somewhere different as opposed to generally just out in front kind of by the judge's feet, or out in front of your platform if you're just training, that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. I tend to space
even for
out.
A relatively simple lift, like just a squat. I mean, if you need to pick a consistent point, and usually it's not looking up because that causes all kinds of funny positions. But like, I don't do that either. I need to probably think about that. Like when I deadlift, look somewhere consistently. I haven't thought about that in years, really.
Yeah. It's one of those things you learn, and then at some point you just stop thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, with all these lifts, the difference between like in a squat, it could be 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 pounds even, as if, okay, that set, I didn't think about my knees going out an extra half inch, which keeps my hips in better position. I didn't think to just pull my elbow down that inch so when I go down, I don't tip forward. Like, all that stuff is huge, but you just get in the habit of getting kind of lazy with your thoughts, and you just forget to practice it yourself. Or you, like you said, or you tell somebody else to do it. Oh, on your bench, your heels are floating. Then you bench and your heels float. Just as the same thing applies. You got to have people actually looking at you.
Yeah, the other thing, too, was some things were programmed into the training that week that I normally don't program for myself. I don't do like a lot of hang power snatches a lot of hang snatches. We weren't doing power. We were just doing hang snatches like that Monday night. Mm-hmm. So we found like our one rep max on our snatch. And then we just went down for like heavy doubles. And I was like, okay, well, I don't do them very often. I'll do them anyway. Mm-hmm. And I actually hit like a weight that kind of surprised me. I smoked like 95 kilos on a hang power on a hang snatch. I was like, man, if I can do that, I could probably snatch, you know, from the floor pretty good.
Heavy double would be a good URL.
Yeah.
Heavydouble.com. Yeah. All your training needs.
Was it 95 for a double, and then I went ahead for a single at 100.
For a hang snatch?
For a hang. Yeah. Hang snatch.
You'd kind of thrown out hang stuff and just like move to all stop versions. Is that right?
Yeah, per Brian Schilling's request, or suggestion, request.
Please stop doing that.
Please, God.
You're so terrible at that.
Yeah, to sin against God. The argument for the stop snatches versus a hang snatch is that your position is it's an artificial position if you come from above, because you're most likely not in that same exact position when you're coming off the floor. Mm. So you may not be practicing the same exact movement is the argument.
That's tricky because that's what people say about rack pulls for deadlifts. Well, some people say don't do it because what's the point? Because you start in a weird position and you're not going to be in that position when you pull off the floor. Then some people fucking swear by it.
Yeah. I like it. You can do like an extra 200 pounds.
Yeah, some people think that's really useful. Some people don't think it's useful at all. I think the question is it's not right or wrong. It's just that in a particular time of the year, it may be perfect for you. Maybe it's just what you need to break out of some rut you're not even aware of.
Yeah, I like the stop variations for newer lifters.
Yeah, all these hard rules are so silly. Don't do that. That never works. That should be your cue right there that somebody's full of shit. Of all the people, this won't work for somebody some of the time. I mean, come on. Everything works for you. Even if it doesn't work now, it could very well work in a couple months.
Well, I think, too, like, sometimes someone may be giving me advice for where I am in my lifting career. And we're like, you should never do that, or you should always do this. And they're talking about me. Mm-hmm. They're not talking about everybody else.
You suck too much to do that. That's right. They hit you in the chest.
Yeah, I think the stop snatches, stop cleans are very, very useful for newer lifters. But if you've got your positions down pretty well, I think the hang positions can make you a lot stronger.
I completely agree with that for a different reason too. Like if you tell a new lifter that you're gonna do hang snatches, they're not gonna treat picking up the bar like a lift. They're just gonna like bend over and pick it up and then they're gonna get set.
Oh man.
Instead of doing like even just doing like a good deadlift and then bending over at you know, getting into that hang position, that would be fine. But they usually don't. They usually just like walk over there and just kind of like pick it up like without thinking about it at all. So doing the stop version, they get set at the bottom. Right. They do it correctly. They pause and then they do the whole rest of the lift.
What a stop version is. Yeah. Wait, there's a technique wad. We have a technique wad on stop snatches and stop cleans. So
pause the episode.
Yeah. So
and cue technique wad video clip.
Hey, per our conversation earlier, CTP, that'd be real easy. Just put it in there. It'd be easy.
Just throw it in.
Edit it in.
Just edit it in.
What's CTP will be putting the stop snatches in the... maybe.
Why don't you tell them what it
is
anyway?
The stop...
Yeah, why don't you fucking do it?
A stop snatch versus a hang snatch. The stop snatch is you would pull the bar from the floor just as if you're doing a snatch. Instead of coming all the way to the top and then going back down to the hang position, you would just pause on the way there for, say, a two count. And then finish the lift. So you don't come to the top and then go back down.
Probably pretty good at strengthening your back. I used to do a lot of that with snatch grip deadlifts.
Yeah. And what Doug was talking about, people just kind of bend over and like haphazardly rip it off the floor. And then they get set at the top. And I see mostly inexperienced weightlifters and a lot of CrossFitters do that. And it makes me cringe every time. Because anytime you pick something up off the floor, it's an opportunity to get better at picking the bar up off the floor. And every time you don't do it that way, you're getting worse at it. You're either getting worse or you're getting better. And if you just need to always be focused, especially if you're in the gym, it makes no sense. Why would you practice to get worse? It's infuriating. I'm going to kick somebody's ass.
Could be your training goal. I've been so good for so long. It's boring.
My training goal is to pick up this bar with a rounded spine. So,
yeah, we're not training people to learn how to lift weights. We're training people to learn how to move correctly anytime they're picking up anything.
That's true.
So when you're getting set and getting in a position, still you should be lifting with all the same fundamental mechanics that we've been teaching you for everything.
Should be the same thing when you go pick up that golf ball out of the hole. Don't just bend over and round your back to pick it up. So, like, if you're picking up a barbell with a round back, you're probably picking up your baby with a round back, too.
What kind of example and a parent are you if you're doing that?
Yeah.
Really?
It's putting that kid in danger.
I've been watching little Max just moving all the time now. He can run. You know, he sticks his chest out and runs around really fast like he's drunk. It's funny. Sticks his chest and belly out. But you should watch that kid pick up something off the ground. It looks like, you know, the best whale you've ever seen. He's in perfect vertical position. Knees are forward. He's very comfortable. He's just sitting there like holding a toy, looking at it, but he's in his perfect bottom position. I'm like, wow. The goal is, if you can just, as a parent, not let him get too inflexible from this point. You just stop all that from happening. You've given this kid the gift of a lifetime. They start out just being able to do everything perfect. He's just sitting at the bottom doing things, looking up, and he's just in this perfect little squat position.
How would you suggest that we go about not letting that get away from him?
Oh, that's the trick of it. I think it's just reminding him that that is where he should be, and not just turning a blind eye and let him go about these stupid coaching activities and these weird sports and without any additional guidance about what's really important.
I think you should just not ever let him sit in a chair.
He's got to get rid of all your chairs. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, man.
I can't live in a chairless house.
Can you get like a car seat where he squats?
I could just scream at him and belittle him into keeping himself. You'll lose daddy's love if you get inflexible and don't weightlift.
All right, guys, we're going to take a break real quick, and then we're going to come back and answer some questions that people have submitted about weightlifting specifically.
I think you should squat with a high bar position. Let's try to be as boring as possible for the next hour.
All right, guys, we're back. We're going to answer some questions about weightlifting. And I did forget to do this in the first part of the show, but make sure to go to fitter.tv, that's FITR.TV, and sign up for our newsletter so you can be made aware of all the happenings of Fitter TV and the Barbell Shrug crew.
That's why it's called a newsletter.
That's right.
Yeah.
New stuff, plural.
That's right.
In the letter.
We got a question about squatting. Squatting assistance work? Come out.
Yeah, someone asked us first about knee health, about if your knees are getting a little achy, what kind of things can you do to still do weightlifting most days of the week, but let your knees rest a little bit. I know in the past we've had people do more of the power variations, and kind of like you said earlier in the show, sometimes catching at the bottom, especially if you're doing a lot of high volume squatting, catching the lifts at the very bottom can be rough on your knees. Especially if your technique isn't really spot on, you're always catching a little bit forward, and then you have to really shove your hips forward, and you're on your toes a little bit. It's a little rough on your knees. So I personally like doing more power variations, power cleans, power snatches, kind of like Chris was saying earlier, to just take the stress off your knees if you're getting a little achy here and there. Now, what kind of variations do you do for people to take their stress off the knees where they can still train frequently?
Tell them to take fish oil and suck it up. No, I'm just kidding. They usually do get that advice to a degree. And then some knee pain is to be expected under certain training cycles. I was actually having a discussion with somebody yesterday about that. And it's like some points in the phases of training, if you're kind of training at like a competitive level, not just I want to be healthy level, like there's going to be a phase of training where you're going to feel kind of beat up and things going to be a little bit achy.
Well, that was going to be my point. I mean, years ago, we talked about we'd sit in the lab with Brian and we'd say, people don't understand that this is not an activity for being healthy. This is when you're going to this level, you're going to have pain. You're going to expose yourself to a risk of injury.
Mm-hmm.
Don't expect this to be a pursuit just for your overall emotional and physical well-being.
Yeah.
You're trying to win something.
Snatching and clean and jerking 5 days a week and then squatting 3 or 4 days a week is not a recipe for optimal health. Unfortunately,
I'd say it's probably more the lifts. It's probably less the squats because I think actually maybe volume, but I don't think squats on their own are that bad.
Yeah,
wear you down. I think doing the lifts is particularly in weightlifting. I think that's what grinds.
Yeah,
twice a day practicing the snatch and clean and jerk like you're supposed to if you want to really get good and hone your technique is gonna beat you to shit.
Yeah, and going back to the advice, I don't tell people just to suck it up. I mean, to a degree, we do, but at the same time, one of the things of variations I like is at our facility, most likely you're going to be doing a high bar squat. Your knees are going to be taking a good bit of the force. And if someone is experiencing some knee pain, I usually like just put them on like a low bar, move the bar down their shoulders, and then have them sit back more and let them try and keep more of a vertical shin and maybe introduce a box. So there's a make it a box squat too. So low bar squat can be good. The box can be really good. You can actually, you can actually squat more volume if you have a box because you're not having to go through that transitionary period where like bouncing out of the bottom and stuff like that.
That's also why it's good for guys like football players in season, especially because you can squat all the time. You're doing something that's actually probably closer to what you're doing in the game if you're like a lineman. So it has some crossover to some positions, but mostly you're just not bouncing and you can do it all the time, really heavy, and not really have any repercussions from it.
Yeah, I've gotten stronger.
It's useful. It's specific, but it's useful.
Really and healthier useful. Doing that. I know that I've had to go through periods of time where my knees felt really bad, and I went to low bar box squats for a few months. My knees started feeling really good, and I went back to the high bar squats, and didn't really lose any strength and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it was great.
The whole key with that is, I mean, if all you do is one or the other, you're probably really bad at one or the other. So you should probably mix the other one in, but don't stick with it so long where you get bad at the counter lift. Mm-hmm. That's what makes most sense to me.
If you're a weightlifter, I'm unless there is something wrong, I probably won't have a low bar squat.
But
the average person, the other consideration too, when it comes to CrossFit and coaching and CrossFit, and we had a good session a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about ankle mobility. Mm-hmm. We had Doug was giving staff training for the coaches at Faction. Mm-hmm. And it got into a squat discussion, you know, low bar versus high bar, who should be doing this. And a lot of it has to do with like leg levers. You know, some people don't belong high bar squatting, you know, maybe at all.
Yeah.
You know, they got these long legs and it's just putting a lot of stress on their knees. They probably shouldn't be doing like full snatches and full cleans either, you know, because they're having to catch in the bottom and transition and their knees are just like way, way out there.
I feel like that's similar when you see people who have really short like forearms and can catch a clean effortlessly versus some people who just are not never getting a very good rack position. Mm-hmm. So if you're not a weightlifter, I don't know how much sense it makes to be catching cleans with the ball. Like, for me, like doing a squat clean, I just catch it 2 inches off my chest and wreck my elbows anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just some things you have to adapt to given your body.
Yeah. And
Mitchell has a squat differently than somebody who's built like Austin in our gym.
Yeah.
If you're 6'2",
all limbs and no torso.
If you're 6'2" and a short torso versus 5 feet tall, a long torso, and you're built like one of these Eastern European weightlifters, you can't train the same way. Not even talking about lifestyle and drug use and all that. Just the way you came out into the world, you're not going to be able to train the same way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that could change how much you squat, mm-hmm. no matter what type of squatting it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got guys that have short legs, long torsos, and they can do that high bar, you know, ass to grass squat.
Or front squat like nobody's business because they're just mm-hmm. really vertical. Yeah. And that's naturally a good position.
And then some people don't, just.
I was telling you the other day, Doug, how like, man, mm-hmm. even this, I just picked up for 2 seconds the weight. You had like 275 on the bar. I just picked up for 2 seconds, put it down. Like, man, it's such a bad position for me.
But we're talking about that front rack position?
Yeah. Or just having the bar in front of my body. Mm-hmm. But then again, I can, you know, in my prime, I did a good morning with 700 pounds. Mm-hmm. And most people don't think it's like, wow, that's probably more impressive than front squatting X. But
not
for me. I see somebody front squat 500 pounds. I'm like, wow, that's just really crazy.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. I just can't be vertical. But I can be bent over all day.
You like front squat, box squats? Or people that got achy knees that are weightlifters?
Huh. I've never prescribed, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm more likely to do like safety bar, box squat or something like that. Mm-hmm. But the only people I've ever prescribed the front squat, box squat is people who are really inexperienced and don't have a lot of good they have really poor mobility, mm-hmm. and that's just to get them to not squat as deep and, you know, have that
consistent
depth.
People take this on like, what's the right thing to do? Should I do this or that? And it's just no such thing.
No.
If you're a competitive mm-hmm. weightlifter, you're not going to be very good unless you are good in traditional upright front and high bar back squat position. I don't know how you can catch a clean by training any other way. That's become obvious to me more and more time. Like, I've tried to do more high bar stuff, but it doesn't really suit me. But I understand why I would never be able to catch a heavy clean because I'm not in the position to do it mechanically. You have to train that position. But if you're a football player, a general CrossFitter, you know, it's probably not so important to always be in a perfectly upright, hips forward, you know, back straight up and down position. That's not necessarily always required. What's wrong with a low bar back squat? What's wrong with doing good mornings and,
you know what, they're, you know, all that shit. You kind of bring up an interesting point, and that you talk about positions, and I know that sometimes people have a hard time getting, they can catch a clean at the bottom. They get the clean on the shoulders and they have to grind it from the bottom. And they think, I need to get a stronger front squat. And mm-hmm. that was me at one point too. Mm-hmm. And I've discovered like my front squat's up there. And I can't clean as much as I can front squat. There's a large enough discrepancy there to be a little worried about what's happening on the technique side of things. And what I've been finding lately is people are not staying, they're not keeping their chest up during the clean. They're pitching forward a little bit. Mm-hmm. And also they're relaxing their core during a transition. So what's happening is they're actually just not catching the bar in an optimal position. They need to be sticking more upright. And the thing is, it has nothing to do with your front squat position. If you do not keep good positions on the pull on your clean on the way up. That front squat up when you catch in the bottom is going to feel like garbage no matter how strong you are.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. no matter so, how, yeah, if you catch it too far out front, it's just going to be impossible to come up with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people reach for the bar, you know, just like I'm here right now. If the bar's out here and they don't pull into them enough, they reach with their back to get to the bar, and then they're just totally out of position for the squat all the way up.
Yeah. Yeah.
They either drop it or the front squat's really hard because they're all out of whack, all rounded over forward.
Yeah, anytime I'm having a grind of, and it happens more often than not, anytime I have to grind out a clean, it's because my pull was bad. It has nothing to do with how much I can squat. It has to do with, did I stay tight? Did I keep everything tight when I was doing my clean?
Yeah, if your butt comes up earlier, you end up out on your toes, or you have to hop forward, all those things. If you get it on your shoulders, it's going to be a harder squat.
Yeah,
because you pulled wrong on your first pull, like you're saying.
Yeah, recently I've really fixed that myself, and it's funny. It's like cleans that used to be extremely hard for me. I'm like, and I used to think, oh, I need to front squat more. I'm like standing right up with it. It's not even that hard. Mm-hmm. All I had to do is change my. It's actually changing my starting position a little bit, which allowed me to be in a better position on the pull, and then all of a sudden, front squatting a clean got really easy.
If front squatting is what you needed to be more obvious when you're front squatting, like, well, I can't catch clean snatch X when I'm trying to stand up. Oh, and I can squat 100 pounds in the front squat. Well, it's obvious that getting stronger in that would be pretty cool. But yeah, if it's an acute thing that happens, oh, I can pull a lot of weight easily, and all of a sudden I just drop it. It's probably something more technique based, not just. It's not always like I get. Now it's easy to hear people say, oh, you just need to get stronger. Well, some of the time, but that's just really a elementary way of thinking about it for a lot of people.
Yeah, there's stronger and then there's like stronger in positions
years,
too.
I heard, I got trained with a lot of powerlifters who, you know, for some reason they thought that they could comment on matters of weightlifting. Oh, we just get beat every year because we're so weak. If they just got strong, then like as if it was that easy.
You mean,
that's one thing.
The United States, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, as if all they needed to do was just get strong and that would fix everything. Well,
oh,
no,
man.
I mean,
they
never thought about that.
What you actually realize is that, okay, when you talk about these high bar positions and these lifts, they are pretty strong. Actually, yeah. I mean, you have a lot of strong domestic lifters, and all the factors that are holding them back are some things that they can't control and some things that they really can't. But, you know, it's not easy to say, oh, I never thought if I just squatted 800 pounds. Well, thanks. You know, thanks for that insightful tip. But no, it's not just like, oh, it'd be obvious when you squat. If you can clean 300 and you can squat 300, squatting more will be good for you. And you probably can improve that really easy.
Yeah.
But if you front squat 400 and you're having trouble catching a clean with 250, no, it's something mechanical, some form is going on, buddy.
Actually, yeah. I got a question for you guys. So I was going to bring up using good mornings like you were talking about in RDLs or straight leg deadlifts. You know, as a way to get more volume to keep your hips and your back healthy, but you're not getting a lot of knee stress at the same time. But do you think that carries over to weightlifting performance, like being strong in that, you know, all the way bent over position? Or by the time you're out there, you mean you drop the bar already anyway, so it doesn't really matter. You don't need to be strong out there.
I don't like RDLs and good mornings for newer athletes, just because it's hard enough just getting people in the proper positions without potentially confusing them with doing everything different while holding a barbell. I like good mornings better than RDLs. And then also I tend to program banded good mornings. I like those a lot.
That's been my favorite for years and years and years and years. I can't ever explain why, but there's something about that silly exercise that for warmups and cool downs makes everything right again.
I feel like
you're talking about just with a band.
Yeah.
Not like barbell with bands. Like,
no, that's, right, but I used to do that, and I don't do it anymore. I'd say you take a average to heavy band, so not the thin one, but not a super heavy one. You step on it with shoulder width stance. You put it over your neck, and you just do a good morning. You can do it strict. You can do it. I do it like kind of like I fold up and down like every vertebrae at a time. When I get done with that, my whole back of my body has a pump, and I feel ready to then lift. Or if you get through catching a lot of snatches, and you're all beat to shit, and your back feels like it's locked down. Two sets of 15 to 20 with that, and you can walk away feeling like you're a new man. Mm-hmm. Very, very effective for warm-ups and cool-downs.
And if you want to take it to the next level, instead of going under your feet, just wrapping the band around a squat rack.
Yeah, the old
putting a little more tension on it.
The old Brent Mikesell variation of it, where you choke it around the bottom of something stable, you straddle it facing away from the stable thing, put it over your head, walk out, and then it takes a little bit to get the lean down because you don't want to, like, you know, get thrown back into whatever you're tying the band to. But yeah, that's it's so, so effective at a warm up and cool down.
Yeah.
Assistance lifts are always so weird. I mean, some people are going to swear by them and they're going to be really good lifters. Some people are never going to even think about it and they're going to be really good lifters. Mm-hmm. It's sort of, I don't think there's any hard and fast rule. I think as you get older, probably really good for getting work in when you're beat up. Mm-hmm. If you're new to lifting, and you're like, you know, how do you know if a good morning or like a glute ham raise will help you lift more in anything? Well, if you can get on a glute ham and like you can barely do one without having your hamstrings shoot off of your ass, mm-hmm. getting better at that's probably going to be pretty good at just raising the strength around these joints and probably helping you do things like keep a good position as you're pulling. It's probably gonna be hard to keep a good position on a pull if you can't even keep your body in a good position when you're doing a back raise.
Yeah.
So it's going to help you.
You need to have some requisite amount of strength in that movement pattern.
Yeah. Or like, you know, even like if you want to get better at jerking, well, like if you can't bench press your body weight, I mean, maybe doing a little bench press could help you jerk more if you're just that weak in the arms. Mm-hmm. Is it important to bench all the time? And the more you bench, the better you jerk? No. But if there's, I mean, everything has its place to kind of, you got to try it and see if it raises your ability to do the other thing. Mm-hmm. But it's really tricky. There's no rule about what and when and how you should do those things.
Yeah.
Hey, you just got to try it and see if it works for you. You're good about that. You're great about taking like new advice and implementing it right away and trying it and just seeing if it works.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't do that very well. I don't do that very well at all. I'm like, oh, I don't know about that. I'm going to toss that around for a couple of years in my head. And then
the honest thing is, like, if you were like, okay, I'll do 100 banded leg curls and see if it helps me. If you try it, it helps. I mean,
that's what Louie told me to do.
Yeah. I mean, people do that and it works.
Go do 100 leg curls with that band. I was like, is Louie fucking with me?
He
might not have been.
He definitely wasn't.
See, and the other thing Louie told me to do was super wide stance, straight leg deads. Heels, yeah. Build up to a single. And I didn't even do it. I didn't even take Louie Simmons' advice and try it.
I can't do sumo anything anymore because my glute fill is going to rip in half. Can't do it anymore. Yeah, it's a limiting factor with age. You got to be smart.
Talking about jerks a little bit, there's two things.
You call Louie a jerk? Or
nah.
Speaking of jerks, that jerk.
That Louie guy. Now,
weightlifting jerks.
So this past weekend, it was obvious that jerks were my limiting factor on my clean and jerk. I can clean it. I don't know what I'm saying.
Oh my God.
You can clean it, but you can't jerk it.
That's what I meant to
there
say.
You go.
Yeah. And I don't, and it's not technique. My positions are fine. So,
if I may say, my positions are perfect.
That's what I was told anyway. No. So I'm working on shoulder strength, and some things that worked for me in the past were like heavy Turkish get ups. And then, surprisingly, like, or maybe not surprisingly to some people, is ring handstand push-ups. So in the past, I saw really good results out of coupling heavy Turkish get-ups and ring. And I think a lot of that has to do with, for both those movements, you have to practice a lot of stability, not just in your shoulder, but throughout, you know, your entire body, core.
And they're not as hard on you as doing like a jerk.
Right. Jerks mess my shoulders up. Like if I jerk more than once a week, man, they just ache all week.
Yeah, that's one thing I've learned is that you got to be careful how many times you push a bar. It beats your arms up, no matter how you're doing it. If it's bench, if it's press, dumbbell pressing, jerking, push pressing, as you get older, the golden days of doing that 3 or 4 days a week are really gone.
Yeah, I used to be like, well, I got to get my shoulder stronger for jerks, so I'll do push presses on Monday, I'll work on jerks on Wednesday, and then I'll max out, I'll do clean and jerk on Saturday, and my shoulders.
That's where it'd be
out.
Nice to have drugs, because that's just not possible with a life and a normal body.
So, what I'm going to be working on. So for me, I truly believe it's core stability and shoulder strength that's my limiting factor on my jerk right now. So I'm going to be throwing in heavy Turkish get ups, probably at least once a week. I'm going to be doing some ring handstand push ups. I'm going to be doing probably one or two ring handstand push-ups every minute on the minute for, you know, 8 to 12 minutes, somewhere in that range. And then I'm going to be doing some jerk recoveries, but with a yoke. So I'm going to take the Rogue yoke.
I was just thinking about yoke work.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Rogue. What gave me the idea is last week when we were hanging out with Rich Froning, he was talking about how he likes to do overhead. He takes the yoke and does overhead farmer's carry, or yoke walk. Overhead yoke walk.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, I hadn't even thought about that. So, and I was like, whoa,
how much weight?
I could use that like, for a jerk. That'd be a highly unstable.
Just the
jerk
apparatus
recovery.
Is enough weight for that, probably.
Yeah, like we have the extra tall one at Faction, and that one's 200 pounds.
So you get underneath it and then stand up with it.
So just doing a jerk recovery with a 200-pound piece of metal that's rocking back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good idea, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could load up all the weight you could possibly want to do a jerk recovery with.
Yeah, it wouldn't be hard, not one bit. What I like about
I just did a 700-pound jerk recovery.
The yoke, especially, is you can make it more or less stable. If you can put the weights on the actual uprights, and it'll be more stable. And if you put the weights out on the feet, it'll be less stable. Mm-hmm. So you can actually kind of play around with weight versus stability in that case. So I'm going to be doing those things. Less pressing, you know, a Turkish get up, you know, you're basically stay extended the whole time. You're moving your shoulder through a big range of motion while maintaining stability. And ring handstand push-ups are just tough pressing. But what I like about the rings is it's tends to be easier on people's shoulders because they can turn the rings to where, you know,
wherever the pain goes away.
Yeah.
That's
a good example of how that's probably maybe one of the better ways to use assistance lifts. Is like, it allows you to get the work in without beating you up.
Yeah.
That's probably where an RDL is useful, that the weight's lower. You're not damaging your body, but you're still training some things that need to be trained. If it's something you need to be training.
Yeah.
If you have no problem keeping in good positions, I'm not sure what an RDL will do for you. If you can pull it and you just can't stand up or you can't jerk it, then why do a bunch of RDLs? Especially if you're a guy who can do an RDL with 400 pounds for 10 reps. There's probably no point in you doing any more of those.
Right.
Might be a good use of your time to do something else. I'm no master. I'm no guru, but I would say maybe do something else.
Yes, Chris, you are a guru. Don't deny it.
We had another question from a guy about using jerk blocks and pulling from the blocks, like when to do that and why it's a good thing, why it's a bad thing. You got thoughts on that?
Do you have thoughts?
Softball question. I know you have thoughts on that, but I asked anyway.
Have thoughts on everything.
Maybe you don't have thoughts on that.
Yeah, actually, I do not do a lot of programming from the blocks because most of our athletes have not been training for they haven't been weightlifting, you know, for years on end.
Mm-hmm.
And I do prefer the stop versions of the lift for most of them.
Mm-hmm.
I do play around with the blocks a little bit with more advanced athletes, and I think it can be really good depending on what they need to work on. If you're having trouble pulling underneath the bar, doing a pull off the blocks kind of limits the amount of speed you're getting off the ground. So you really have to work on the turnover to get underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
Most people probably don't need to worry about pulling from the blocks. I don't think.
I do like it for people that have severe like ankle mobility issues, and they like no matter what you do, they're not going to be able to get into a good position from the floor. So elevating them for a period of time, can help. Kind of a different situation.
Funny you say that. So ever since I sprained the ankle, I can't even get in not that my bottom position was ever even close to good, but now it's even worse. I can't even bend this ankle anymore.
Yeah.
So I can't bend this elbow, and I can't bend that ankle. Damn it. It won't heal.
It's all on the right side.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not...
What's going on?
I'm not old, but my training age is actually kind of old now. And shit like that doesn't recover as easy. So frustrating.
I actually like where you were going with the blocks. And people who can't get in good position, I see it a lot. People going to pull a snatch off the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that they can get... The only position they can get in is a rounded back.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get that snatch grip, you know, that wider grip and get it off the floor. So, yeah, elevating it can definitely be good for those people.
Mm-hmm.
But
there's no good use, we said, targeting something that's maybe out of condition, or if you're a higher training age or a little more experienced, getting work in without beating you up, or allowing you to do a lift you otherwise wouldn't be able to do. All these are good reasons to do assistance lifts. Not because they will magically make you stronger.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really what they're going to do.
And here I am talking about, like, I really don't use blocks a lot. And, you know, and a month from now, you might just see, like, blocks being thrown in, like, every 2 days on the block. There really is no telling. I just haven't ever spent a lot of time doing it. So it doesn't mean it's not good or anything like that. It's just I tend to not program that a lot.
Yeah, like for deadlifts, for example, like in an ideal world, I would like to start somebody off with a deadlift, like from a block, like above the knee. And if they can do it perfect, then put them below the knee, and then if they can do a perfect, put them like mid shin, and you just kind of work your way towards the floor, and you find out, you know, what height they can pull perfectly from, and then as their mobility improves, you can move them closer and closer and closer to the floor.
That's a good reason to do box squats too, for new people who aren't used to squatting. It's probably pretty hard to not teach somebody to keep in good position and have them do a box squat when you first teach them how to do it. Then you can slowly work that out and have them be comfortable getting down. Because the first time people try a squat, it's obviously not very pretty. They start reaching and they get up tight for no reason. But having the box there allows you to inch it down in a similar way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the box is nice too. You can start people on the box and then you're kind of starting at the end.
Yeah.
And then they can stand up and then go back down. Yeah. As opposed to starting standing, wondering where to put their feet. You can put them on the box, put their feet where you want them, sit them up nice and tall, and then just have them stand out of that position. And then they know exactly where to go back to.
Yeah, I guess the trouble is whenever you find one of these exercises you particularly like, where you put all your trust in and you do it way too much, then it's a facilitator that becomes a crutch. Like for years, in a powerlifting community, a lot of them do nothing but box squats because it goes from being, I'm going to think of something I need to do in my training. Oh, this will help me accomplish X, Y, Z, to a dogmatic view like, okay, all I should do is box squats because that's the only thing that matters. Mm-hmm. And that helps me for reasons that I don't understand, but everybody else is doing it, so I should do it, which is probably where I started from. You know, not thinking about why I'm doing it. It's just like, well, this is what they do.
That's where we all start.
All you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, when you first start, you got to find someone who you perceive to be really good at what they do and just follow them blindly for a while. And then once you get some experience and some perspective, then you can start tweaking things for yourself.
So once you start pulling your snatches off the box because, well, I just really like doing this and I'm really good at it and I'm not really good on the floor anymore, so fuck it, I just won't do that. Now you don't need to do that anymore. You should probably try to work something else.
I think sometimes it's good just to throw stuff in just for the sake of variety, though, too. It's like, you know, if you haven't done that thing in a while, maybe you should just do it just because you haven't done it in a long time, especially if, you know, you're not making a lot of progress at the time. You know, it could almost... Doug was talking about this before. He's saying, I'm pretty good about, like, taking new ideas and just implementing them. Like, sometimes I don't even care. Like, the results that come out of some of the things that we try are not the results that I was looking for, you know? So I'm not, like... You know, sometimes I'm like, oh, this is going to really help over here. And next thing I know, I see this other thing happening. It's like, oh, well, all right, well, I'll take that. That's good.
Benefit you didn't even know was going to be there.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and you're talking about jerk blocks too.
Yeah.
And jerk boxes. It's hard to get a good set.
It is. Every set we've ever had falls apart.
Yeah. I think that's everybody though. Like everyone I know has got like, you know, they just, you beat them up pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like those a lot, especially if you're going to do several sets of jerks, you know, several reps, you know, taking close to your one rep max and dropping it back on your shoulders.
Yeah.
Like if you're a decent lifter, that's hard because that's a lot of weight you're going to drop back on you. So just dropping back on the blocks. You know.
I mean, if you're overhead pressed, like your standing strict press is like 180 pounds and then you go over there and you jerk 320 and then you do a bunch of negatives with 320, right. Like that's some heavy negatives, man. You're doing like you know, 150, 160, 170%.
That's the video of the guy. You know, the guy who did the muscle snatch with 150
kilos.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, he's got 330 pounds.
You got to watch that.
How much
video.
Did you do? Sorry,
muscle snatch with 150 kilos.
Oh, I did see that. That was awesome.
Was most impressive thing I've ever seen. There's also a video of him doing he power cleans 200 kilos, which is impressive enough. I mean, a very strong, easy power clean.
Yeah,
and he does a set of 5 jerks with that. And not very hard jerks.
I saw that too. Yeah.
That was also, this guy is a monster.
Yeah, 5 jerks in a row with 440.
Yeah, and just lowers it down, catches it, and then a quick little shuffle of feet, bang, right back over his head.
That's ridiculous.
It's amazing. 'Tis not human.
Yeah, some people that like, if they can clean it, they can jerk it. Mm-hmm. That just makes me mad. They're probably mad too. Like, I wish I could get my clean to be what my jerk is, you know? It's the opposite problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, going back and talking about how like my shoulders get beat up, like using jerk boxes and stuff like that, that definitely saves your shoulders instead of dropping them back on.
Yeah.
Build
you a pair and use them in your gym. They're great.
Yeah, there's plenty of resources out there on the Google. You know,
type it in the
search
Google.
Search it, and there's all sorts of plans. I don't know of the best plan as of yet. I wish somebody would like sell them.
I can't seem to find them anywhere.
I can't find anyone who's selling them.
Just selling the actual jerk box.
Like I just like I'll pay $500 for shipping. I don't care. Like I just want. Something.
Well, you know, you can get like the good option may be those like at Glensden, they use those plyo boxes that they manufacture. They're padded, but they jerk on them.
Oh, are they doing that?
Yeah, they can get, you can use them for jumps, but they are, and I think Elite Fitness sells them.
I did see those softer plyo boxes.
And then they sell
a
couple of modular units, thin and thick, and a top one that's got rubberized surface that you can pull and jerk off of, and it kind of just sinks into it. It's like a heavy foam. So you don't get such a rattle and destruction on wood. It kind of just catches it.
I'm going to check that out.
Might be a sensible option. Plus, it's obviously a whole lot less of a pain in the ass to set these things up. It's a light foam block.
Yeah, that's the other reason I like jerk boxes, because people move them around and then they just leave them there. Because
they're
heavy
pain
as
in the ass
shit.
To restack.
Yeah.
They're heavy, man.
And we had wheels for a while, but then one of the wheels broke, and now you have to take the whole thing apart and carry each individual piece.
You know, $1,000 for the blocks, and you're probably done. I don't think they're crazy expensive. So you get a bunch of utility out of it. You can jump on them, you can clean on them. You don't have to worry about stacking up 100 pounds of wood every time you want to adjust the height.
Right.
Yeah, I'll look into that.
Look into it.
In my free time, yeah. We'll look into that.
Mm-hmm. With your Tim Schwartz methods or whatever.
Tony Schwartz. Yeah, if you're looking to be more productive at work, look up Tony Schwartz. He's written a couple of really good books.
Big as mine.
That's right. he wrote a couple of really good books on productivity.
And I'm going to read them if I ever find the time.
That's it.
We're done.
We got talking about stuff that's not training, so it's probably time to cut this off.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in. Doug, what do you got?
Same thing I always have. We talked about mobility issues earlier today, not being able to get into a good start position because you lack mobility. So if you want to work on your mobility and find out where you have restrictions, then go to Fitter TV and click on the shop tab, click on seminars, and you can read all about maximum mobility. There's also on that page explaining what's in the seminar. There's a sample clip where it talks all about ankle mobility. So if you have ankle issues, you can watch the whole ankle section on that page. It's maybe 10 or 15 minutes long. So
people probably always think about their hips and shoulders and shit. They probably neglect the ankles.
People that don't have a lot of training experience don't really think about ankle mobility being like probably the biggest restriction out of almost everything.
Yeah, your ankles are important.
It starts at the bottom. It's your foundation.
Like a house. I hate house building analogies, by the way. Every time someone's like,
it's like
building
a house, built
I'm like,
on
damn it.
It's built on sand.
I get the analogy. Shut up.
All right, Chris, what do you got?
I don't know. The blog, chrismoreblog.com. People seem to like that a lot. Go on there, check it out. Probably some new posts up there.
It's one of my favorite blogs.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I have a lot of fun. I push the boundaries of talking about stuff.
Very descriptive.
It's good. Just trust me on this. The simple strength is up on the Fitter TV. People seem to really like that.
People have been buying the shit out of that lately, actually.
I think it's
maybe more than maximum mobility.
Not a single complaint.
Hurting my feelings.
Not a single complaint about it. That's what I'm surprised. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Not that we tell him about.
No.
Yeah, he gets his feelings hurt.
Yeah. What about you, Michael? What do you want to plug?
Man.
It's Christmas season.
You are gonna have a product someday.
I will. I keep putting it off. I'm like, you know what? You know what? Here's the truth is I've got like 5 products in the pipeline, and I'm working on them all, and they'll be done in 5 years.
Is a pipeline some sort of like?
I will finish all 5 at the same time.
That's right.
What's a pipeline mean? Like they exist in your head, and not in any kind of polished physical form.
Yeah, it's more of like a pipe dream than a pipeline.
You don't worry. I've got like five products in the pipeline. Meaning, I had that idea when I was taking a shit this morning. Oh, that would be cool. I just gotta like flesh it out and like manufacture it and all this easy stuff. I got the idea. Whatever. I'm putting it in my EndNote or my Evernote. It's done. It's as good as manufactured.
If I wrote it down that I was going to do it, it's practically done. Yeah. That's for sure. Now, I am doing a nutrition. It's more about behavior change.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a lifestyle nutrition talk next month. So
that's going to be the bonus for Paul's seminar product, which is coming out probably in the next week or two.
Awesome.
One of two bonuses. One of the other bonuses is the talk that I gave for one of the local businesses here in town, which was kind of a portion of the Faction Foods Nutrition course that I kind of whittled down just for people that are super, super, super busy and gave them only like the most practical part of the whole presentation. So your presentation and that presentation will be bonuses on Paul's new nutrition seminar coming up.
And I just realized that I talked about my trip to St. Louis and I did not even mention that I competed.
Okay.
Or what I did.
We'll end on a positive note. You PR'd.
PR'd my snatch. Yep. So I did a 2-hour. I showed up heavy, And you're heavy
body weight.
Yeah. So I compete at 77 kilos, which is 169 pounds. And I went and weighed in. I was about 5 pounds heavy. So it's about 174. Mm-hmm. Because Corey's scale at home is off. So,
well, he's Canadian. I don't blame him.
It was in Canadian pounds. That was the problem. So
Canadian pounds.
Doesn't hit a guy.
So I'm like, I was suited up. Every time I cut weight, I swear I'm never going to do it again. So I cut about 5 pounds in 2 hours. No, I'm sorry. 5 pounds and 45 minutes. I jump rope. They had Concept 2 rowers. So that was great. And Airdynes. So I cycled between jumping rope, Airdynes, and Concept 2 rower.
Just wore your ass out before the competition.
Yeah, I got 5 pounds off in 45 minutes. Jumped on the scale, buck naked. I weighed in at 76.98. Mm-hmm. And then I just crushed a bunch of whey protein and some sugar, some Gatorade. And then ate half of a Denny's breakfast.
Thinking all this through.
I carved it up. I didn't eat anything for like 18 hours leading up. I actually did, like, you know, I really had to lose some weight for this. And it was more than I had really thought I was going to do.
If you cup your balls and pick them up, it takes a half pound off on the scale. Cup and lift.
Should have known that.
Keep that in mind
next
time. You
got to stay on your toes, too.
So yeah. I got weighed in, and I felt I had 2 hours before I lifted. And I was near the end of the session since I was lifting some of the heavier weight. But
I was one of the stronger athletes at this local high school gym.
It was middle school, actually.
Yeah.
No, but
this is turning into a long story for shutting down the episode.
I felt terrible, and then I lifted and hit a PR. So I snatched 113 kilos, which is 248 pounds, and clean and jerk. That was a PR, and then my clean jerk was not a PR, but it's 130 kilos, which I don't know how many pounds that is.
But you cleaned easily, and then we're having issues with your jerk.
Yeah, I was having an issue. Yeah, the clean was easy, and the jerk was hard.
You know what? We end on the word of the day, hearing that story, inspiration. You're an inspiration to us all. Facing hardships in your life, overcoming them. You know what? Who has to deal with such a calamity in their life that they have to lose 5 pounds in a couple hours?
It's
you
hard.
Did it, and you said you won the championship. You won all the medals. Good job. Inspiration.
Quick funny story.
Quick like the last quick?
Yeah, almost as quick. There's a kid, same weight class, same exact openers, and we tied at 243 kilo total. And but he weighed in at 76.85.
What'd you weigh in again?
76.98. So like if you tie...
He kept his balls. You didn't.
But he's also 20 years old, so he's a junior. So,
you technically weren't competing. $5 trophy still.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So I still got the gold.
You're in the old man class.
That's right.
nothing says you're accomplished like taking home that cheap-ass medal.
All right, guys. See you next time. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.